Welcome to the Upshot subscriber bonus segment this week. Thanks so much for being a subscriber. He's Jamie. I'm Charlie. We're joined today by Aaron Howard, who was with us on the main show talking about putting statistics and the improvement of putting. Aaron, welcome back for this second segment.
Thanks for having me again.
So really quick, I meant to get to this on the main show and I basically just spaced it. We've talked about over the last few years, let's say, the fact that FPO players have not been putting as well as MPO players, and there's been a lot of speculation as to why that is. Are we seeing FPO players close that gap in your mind?
Yeah, I think so. I think the data suggests that they're improving at putting faster than MPO is, right? So I think, you know, by definition, they are definitely closing the gap. And you know, the trend of the compression of C1X putting that we talked about, you know, more explicitly in MPO is actually even stronger in FPO, right? Meaning those that are finishing lower are improving even faster than those that are, you know, improving than those that finish higher. Which is interesting. So not only is the FPO field getting better as a whole, but you know, as Jamie mentioned in the main pod, you know, parity is increasing even more in FPO, which mm-hmm. I think has been a criticism, you know, of FPO in the past, that you know, there's not a ton of competition, right? There are a few dominating at the top, and I think, you know, this is consistent with the eye test, I think, that we are all seeing, that just the whole FPO field is getting better, and it's pretty awesome.
Right. So the main topic for this discussion is going to be strokes gained. I would say it's basically an unfamiliar topic to most disc golfers because it's not something that is really discussed. But it is a big topic in golf. So do you want to try to give a basic idea of what strokes gained is and how it's used in golf?
Sure. So, I mean, you could think, the way it's used in golf, just I guess giving an example would be good, is you hit a tee shot, you know, and it land on a specific hole and it lands, you know, I don't know, 50 yards from the pin, right? And so what you have then is an expected number of shots that it's supposed to take for you to get the ball in the hole from that 50-yard spot, right? And if you can do it in fewer strokes than the average player, then, you know, you are gaining a stroke over the field, you know, by making it in the hole faster, right? So, and you know, you can parse that out, you know, how many strokes do players gain over the field off of the tee? How many strokes, you know, do you gain off of the green? You know, you can break it down to any level, and really conceptually, it's pretty straightforward. Where the rubber hits the road is, you know, getting the data to actually calculate those values.
Of course. To try to distill that down maybe a little bit more,
Sure.
Sort of the basic definition is that strokes gained is the measure of how well a player performs compared to the average player
right.
on tour. So
yes.
Not compared to any golfer in the world, but like among touring players, how do you compare
right.
to the average? And mm-hmm. it's really powerful about it is that, as you say, the ability to truly be able to say with statistical confidence that a player
right.
is, you know, better than all of their peers or better than 98% of their peers or whatever at driving mm-hmm. off the tee,
yeah.
but they're, you know, they're weak around the green. And I think, you know, we have, for the most part, I would say we have the statistics to give some sense of this when we're talking about putting.
Yes.
But not really anywhere else. I don't think that we really have much data with which to say this player is better off the tee than the average player, besides very crude eye test things like, wow, they threw that really far.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, we could do stuff like, you know, like circle one in regulation percentage points over average. But again, that's not the same thing at all, right? We're not, because we don't measure victories in circle one in regulation percentage points. We measure them in throws.
Right.
Right. So it's not as useful or as powerful for sure.
So let's talk about that average though. Here's my question. When you look at the PGA Tour, because obviously they rely on strokes gained, right? That's a big thing they harp on, both as like a competitive golfer, you're focusing on it, and then I think for analysis as well. How reliable is our average data, considering when you are on the PGA Tour, it's the top 100 or whatever the exact number is, you get your touring card.
Right.
And you gotta, and that's really hard to earn, and you see a lot of the same faces year over year. And I would wager that our number of consistent faces is a lot smaller in disc golf. You have a lot more local influence at each event. You have a shifting number of the same people. Or what I'm trying to say is, like, not necessarily everybody in the middle of the pack is the same year to year. Maybe not the same caliber, right. Maybe not the same game style. Is that all just moot? Does that wash out in the analysis? Or is that important?
No, I mean, I think it's important, but I think what you could do with disc golf is take into consideration, you could do it a couple ways. You could take into consideration player rating, you know, when you're considering the number of throws it takes to make it in from any given area, or you could consider like SSA or something. So like when I... like a couple years ago, you know, I looked at, you know, throws gained or strokes gained overall for players, right? For like the season. And what I didn't use average, I used over the SSA, for example. So like looking at the article I wrote, like per event, Paige Pierce was like 17.6 strokes over the FPO SSA score, for example. And, you know, like Paul McBeth was 21.5 strokes per event over the average SSA. So, you know, you could, I think you could, you know, consider quality of player, right, when you are fleshing out these types of things. I don't think that is a hurdle that's too high to leap over.
Yeah, if you're listening and you're interested in this, check out datagolf.org. Datagolf.org, I think, is the group that came up with true strokes gained. And true strokes gained takes normal strokes gained and adjusts it for the strength of the field. So Jamie, it gets at exactly what you're talking about, which is you have this non-normalized number, which, you know, might be completely inflated compared to the average at a tournament where there's a lot of lower quality players in the field. But this adjusts for that, this true strokes gained. And so you could basically come up with a very similar normalized number for disc golf. And you can look at off the tee approach around the green. So that's going to be like chipping performance and such for golf and putting. You know, we would have to decide where we would want to carve up those categories in disc golf. But it's very interesting because you can see how top players, like what makes them top players. And my sense is, just sort of like clicking around on this website, is that for the most part, it's similar that in regular golf, you're going to gain more strokes off the tee than with your putting. And it's less of a pronounced impact. And I would be very curious to know what the actual strokes gained values would be in disc golf. Like, are the top players gaining, you know, 2 strokes, 3 strokes off the tee versus only a half stroke on the putting green? I mean, we don't have these answers right now, Aaron, unless you say otherwise, if you've noticed anything in your preliminary research into this.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I think that the numbers are indeed going to be much larger for tee to green than on the green for sure. And yeah, Jamie and I did talk about this a while back, right? How it's interesting that in ball golf, right, we're seeing the same trends where, you know, getting to the green is really the important stat. You know, like Brooks Koepka or something is, you know, he's not the strongest putter, not anywhere close to being the strongest putter. But, you know, he's always finding a way to, you know, finish close to the top in those really big events. But I think it's going to be, you know, something. I think the difference is going to be really big, but I can't tell you what it is off the top of my head. I've played around a little bit by looking at strokes gained putting in FPO a while back. But, you know, I don't know what those numbers are, and I certainly haven't, you know, done it for tee to green in any way that, you know, I would necessarily trust at this point.
Interesting enough, I just clicked over to datagolf.org while you're talking, Charlie, and the tournaments that are up right now as we're recording this, one is talking about El Bosque Mexico Championship by Innova. So I thought that was pretty funny. It is not Innova Champion Discs, obviously. It's the there's some kind of industrial manufacturer, but I clicked over to a golf website and saw Innova.
Whoa.
So it threw me for a loop there for a minute, but I do think that's interesting what you're saying there, Aaron. And I'm wondering, I mean, we kind of hinted at this in, I joked and I said, hey, the smaller basket argument, but how can we use this data to kind of improve, like, how would you use this data if you were somebody designing a course and you're saying, hey, here's version X of disc golf in 2020. But as the players get better and as technology changes and as trends change, I want to be on the next version of what disc golf is. I want to create a course for that game. You know, can you use this data to sort of design courses for that next generation? I know that's kind of an abstract question.
Yeah. And I'm probably not going to have a very satisfying answer for that question. I honestly haven't thought a lot about course design, right? The way I typically think about this stuff is, you know, what I think about is, like, if I had a conversation with a player, what could I tell them about themselves that would make them a better golfer? You know, I haven't really thought about, you know, applying it to course design.
Well, let's do that.
Really, yeah.
Let's do that instead. Let's say you're going to somebody, Joe 1000 rated, and they just got their first sponsorship contract, and they come to you and they say, Aaron Howard, you're gonna be Billy Bean for me right now. We're gonna do a money ball, a little money disc.
Right.
What do I focus on first? I want to just have the best chance at winning every tournament. What order of things should I start to practice by the numbers?
Yeah, I would. I think three things I would say is one is whatever amount of field work you're doing, you should double that. Do more field work. You know, really work on your drives, obviously, is the big thing. The second thing is I would tell people to when you're game planning for an event, is think about getting getting to the green. How, what shot is going to get you to the green? Don't worry about like parking it. Don't worry about going out of bounds. What is going to get you onto the green that's going to get you an opportunity? And what I think that means on average is that players should be a little more aggressive than they think. You know, I think, you know, something I've written about before is that, you know, going out of bounds a little bit can go a really long way to helping you. Like the best players are not those that stay in bounds the whole time. They're the players that go for it and, you know, make it work more often than they don't. So those would be the biggest things that I would tell Joe Schmo 1000 rated.
All right, I have one last question, and it's a very practical question similar to the one that Jamie just asked. If mm-hmm. we want to take the step forward in advancing from kind of what is a relatively basic set of statistics keeping that's happening now with UDisc, which, to be clear, has been leaps and bounds from where we were 5 years ago with basically just scores.
I'll second that. Praise UDisc.
Yeah. I mean, they've done, so it's been an incredible thing when we're talking about being able to analyze the game. How do we take the next step? What is it going to take? What are some of the like practical things that we need to do from a data collection standpoint to make our statistical understanding of the game better?
Yeah, I think it's that shot charting that we mentioned, right? I think
with distance. That is
with distance, with lie quality. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. I think that's what we have to do next. And then, and you know, speaking of shots gained, you know, I think that would add even more nuance, right? You could do like shots gained, you know, in a scramble context or something, you know. I'm assuming, you know, Ricky Wysocki would lead that category, but you know, I think that would be a really cool stat to have. You know, how many strokes better are you than the average player, you know, when you're in a patent pending stance behind a tree? You know, I think that would be, you know, that's the kind of stuff that you could get. And you know, I think the opportunities there are, you know, having that data would open the door wide open, and it would be, you know, we would have years and years and years, you know, of data worth, you know, of things to think about. You know, I mean, like people in other sports, like the NBA and baseball, you know, they say there's enough data, you know, for them to mine for centuries. Because
it would pass the burden from
so much.
It would pass the burden from data collection to analysis and like coming up with statistical methods to analyze the data, but we don't
which
really
is my jam, right?
Yes. So I guess, I mean, maybe that's that simple, like adding distance and like location to both distance from, you know, previous lie to, and then distance to pin, like mm-hmm. that would go a long way, would it not?
Yeah. I also along those lines of, you know, parroting other sports, you know, and Jamie and I have talked about this a little bit before in various contexts, getting things like not only like speed of disc release from hand, but like spin rates and, you know, off axis torque.
Oh, sure.
Things like that. I think those would open a lot of doors as well. You know, like the TrackMan stats for baseball, where they can get the spin of the ball and the angle of release.
Yeah. Analyzing how people throw and how their style of throw affects how the disc comes out.
Shot tracer on live disc golf.
Right, and how it affects their ability to, you know, get into the circle and regulation, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I don't know that I have any other questions, but I always enjoy talking to you, Aaron, because it makes me think a lot. And as you're talking about opportunity in guiding that 1,000 rated player, I can't help but think back to like the Phoenix Suns of maybe a little over a decade ago when they just went with the paradigm of like, we need to get a shot off every 8 seconds. And the theory being, if we get more shots off than most teams, we're going to win more games in the regular season than most teams because we have quality caliber players who are going to make enough shots given more opportunities. So,
right.
Kind of sounds like what you're saying. You have to get out there and give yourself the opportunity to make the putt, whatever you're left with.
Steve Nash, Amare, that was my first NBA love right there.
Oh, they were very entertaining to watch.
What a team. Got screwed by the league. Yeah. When they suspended Amare for a game for stepping onto the court, God, that was bullshit.
Yeah. Yep. I like watching. A lot of people don't. We're getting a lot off track, but like, you know, the Houston Rockets, I love watching their basketball. I think it's very entertaining.
All of these
people that think, you know, running down the court really fast and taking a step back three is not fun to watch. I disagree aesthetically.
That would be a whole nother long podcast debate if you want to get to
we can
old
talk about the
half
aesthetics
court
of
motion versus like transition. Like
and we could also
break.
Talk about the current aesthetics of disc golf as well.
Who is the most aesthetically pleasing form in disc golf?
Oh, man.
Ooh.
I don't know. I think the pure power that you see coming from Drew Gibson is pretty fun to watch. He has good form, too. It's not like it's smooth or anything, but just like the bazooka that is.
It's crazy.
Is arm is insanely fun. It's very satisfying, I would say.
Yeah,
I like
watching double G as well.
Hands.
Right, like that short back and just all the way powered through. Double G comes to mind. He doesn't take a massive reach back on it. It just like it's all right there in that release. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think if you were like, if you're just say, what is like the perfect form? What are you gonna like? If you were trying to design, who is the, you know, the platonic ideal
textbook,
right? I would say maybe Eagle McMahon or something like that, but his isn't, I don't find it that fun to watch, like aesthetically. I don't know why, but if you like look at all the points on his body, you know, I would say he's pretty close to flawless
doing it as well as you can do it. Yeah. Well, hey, Aaron, thanks so much for joining us here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. It was really fun.
Yes, absolutely. Talk to you soon.
Yep.
Thanks so much for joining us on our subscriber bonus segment. We'll talk to you next week.
Steve Nash.